was all excited. I rush home, pitch this idea to Lena.
And I said it was a terrible idea, and absolutely we could not do it. We had too many other partner. Things.
Yes, yeah. Wouldn't make any money, real distraction, do not do it. And I'm a good husband, I agreed. And you know, Lena went to bed around 9, and by 10:30 I had a website up. If you look at the history of footwear, for the 10,000 years that we have evidence that humans were making footwear, for the first 9,952 of those years, every one of those shoes looked like ours. We're not the intervention. The intervention is the modern running shoe.
Welcome to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. This is a show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Live, work, love Colorado is our tagline at ProCo 360. You and I love knowing that anytime we want, we can look west and see the mountains. I've hiked the incline with clients, and I've had a new team member accept a job offer on a chairlift. Oh, but we lovers of Colorado are often misunderstood and sometimes underrated. My mission is to promote Colorado as the home for innovative businesses and leaders. You can help spread the love. Subscribe to the podcast via your app and to the newsletter at proco360.com. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Stephen Sashin and Lena Phoenix of Zero Shoes, a company transforming footwear comfort with products that bend, move, and flex so you can feel the world. This company is thriving with hundreds of five-star reviews, 49,000 Facebook likes, and expanding distribution. All this despite turning down Kevin O'Leary's offer on Shark Tank. I'm super excited to talk about this bolder couple's journey in the crazy competitive world of a footwear brand. Lena, Stephen, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I'm glad you're here, and I'm going to thank our show sponsors. Then we're going to dig in first. Community Banks of Colorado, they go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for Colorado entrepreneurs. And MicroStar Keg Logistics, these guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. Okay, Lena and Stephen, let's go.
Well, first things first, I'm disappointed that there's no beer or stacks of cash from your sponsors. You need to work on that.
I should. At least the beer part, the stacks of cash, I'm not sure is going to happen. But I will tell the listeners that rather than stacks of cash, you brought stacks of shoes. And I am wearing a pair. Which model are these?
That is the Z-Trail sandal. So it's a sports sandal. Think Chaco, Teva, Keen, but one-third the weight, yes. One-third the volume, super flexible. They let your feet bend and move and flex like you said.
Yes. And, you know, one of the greatest things was is I was having them personally applied to my feet by Stephen. I'm like, wow, how often does that happen, right? That the CEO of the footwear company is bending down and applying shoes on my feet. That was cool.
We are a very hands-on company, so.
Well, and I have to tell you, when I was a kid and we would go to shoe stores, I was always sort of confused and thought it was odd that people would do that, that they would spend all that time by your feet. And now that I've been doing it for 8 years, I find it totally fascinating. So there's this weird kind of karmic payback thing that has gone on where I thought there was something odd about that, and now
twisted
that's my life.
Karma payback might be a better term for it, I think. But we know what your shoes are all about. I'm wearing a pair of your sandals right now, but set the stage. Tell us a little bit about the origin of Zero Shoes.
He can do that fastest, well, so I'll let him.
The origin part, I'm going to actually do it a little differently and talk about just sort of what they are and then how we got there. Yeah. And the easiest way I describe what we do is this. Imagine it's the end of the day. You've been on your feet all day, maybe, or just in your shoes all day. Maybe you just finished a run or a workout. You come home, you kick off your shoes. The question is, do you feel better now? And if the answer is yes, that's what people always do, then that's because you've been wearing the wrong shoes. So Zero Shoes are made to let your feet work the way feet work. Like we've said now three times, this will be the third, bend, flex, move, and feel. And so the origin is pretty simple. About 11 years ago, I got back into sprinting after a 30-year break. And what that means is I was getting injured pretty much constantly for about the next 2 years. And one day, a friend of mine who's a world champion cross-country runner said, you should try taking off your shoes and see if you run barefoot and learn anything from doing that. And what I learned was why I was getting injured as well as how to stop getting injured. Mm. So I stopped getting injured. My injuries went away. My lifelong joking level flat feet developed arches. Mm. I became faster. I became a Masters All-American sprinter, one of the fastest guys at that time over 45, now over 55. Arguably, in fact, you might be looking at the fastest Jew in the world over 55, just FYI.
Get the Guinness guys out here and
they're expensive.
Verify that.
They're expensive. And so what happened, I love this natural movement thing and I wanted more of that. So I knew about the Tarahumara Indians in Mexico who ran for for hundreds of miles in sandals made from scraps of tire with some leather lace to hold it on their foot. I did my version of that same thing for myself and for Lena and for a handful of other people. And then it was like a shampoo commercial. They told two friends, they told two friends, and so on and so on. And then one day, and this is the end of the story, a guy who was writing a book on barefoot running said, if you treated this little sandal making hobby like a business and had a website, I would put you in the book. And I have been an internet marketer since 1992. I probably built about 500 websites. So I rush home, pitched this idea.
1992, that was before there was an internet,
It was
right?
practically, I, you know, GeoCities and AOL and IRC and That's CompuServe. Right, So anyway, I was all excited. I rush home, pitched this idea to Lena.
And I said it was a terrible idea and absolutely we could not do it. We had too many other
partner.
Things.
Yes, I wouldn't make any money, real distraction, do not do it. And I'm a good husband. I agreed. And, you know, Lena went to bed around 9:00 and by 10:30, I had a website up. And
shortly thereafter, we began selling do-it-yourself sandal kits.
Yep.
And within a couple of days, we sold one to somebody in Minnesota.
This is the end of November, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And we thought, okay, that's a passionate customer.
Yeah.
And very quickly, we discovered that there was an unserved market that Stephen, because of his experience in internet marketing, was able to get in front of.
Yep.
And within 6 months, we decided, okay, we're all in. So.
Well, how did it go from this notion of you making, you know, little things for friends and so forth? Mm-hmm. How did it turn into an actual product?
Well, the product was couldn't have been simpler. It was we would take big sheets of rubber and cut them into smaller sheets of rubber. We would get big, long things of string, cut them into smaller things of string, and sell that with instructions.
We started out using pre-made rubber from another company that was designed for shoe repair. Hmm. So we just bought it off the shelf. And
at one point, you bought it retail. Well,
we
got it wholesale.
We got it wholesale.
Good. At one point, we were talking to the manufacturer, and they said, you know, you'll be happy to know we just ordered 3,000 sheets of this coming in from Europe. You said, you're not going to be so happy to hear we just ordered 5,000 from our distributor.
Wow.
And so at one point, we owned all of it in the world, which was a pretty cool
And one of our early Colorado stories. So we started out, Stephen just went to Home Depot to get some cord that he could use to make laces.
Yep.
And he got the purple cord because that's my favorite color. But then when we started selling, they had six different colors. And our business grew so fast, we tried to bulk order these laces from Home Depot, but that was for some reason not possible.
They wouldn't do it for some reason.
So we traveled to every single Home Depot in Northern Colorado, cleaned them out of all of their laces, and then turned around and did it again.
Well,
a week
at that
later.
Point, how many were you selling at that point?
Oh gosh, I don't remember. It moved pretty quickly. We thought, hey, this will be cool. It'll pay for make a car payment or something. And within 6 weeks, it was our full-time job. And the pivotal moment for me was Lane and I are walking down on Pearl Street Mall, and a pack of teenage girls run up to us and point at our sandals and go, oh, those are sick. Where'd you get those? And I'm like, we're billionaires. So,
waiting for that. But the girls' attention was nice, right?
Exactly.
By the way, listeners, this is ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who'd be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Stephen Sashin and Lena Phoenix of Zero Shoes, a Boulder company transforming footwear. And at some point then, besides after the teenage pack of girls came and pointed at them, right? You actually, though, have developed sort of a tribe of satisfied customers,
oh my gosh.
Right?
Yeah.
So you say, oh my gosh, your website's amazing because it's not like 4.5 stars or 4 stars. It's like all 5-star reviews, hundreds of them.
Yeah.
So how did that
happen? I just want to correct that.
All right. How did that happen, Mr. Unassuming?
It's a combination of things. I mean, the first is that the people who got into this idea back in late 2009, through 2010, when the idea of barefoot running started to take off. So this is an iconoclastic early adopter crowd.
Right.
And I think part of it is just giving them a place to get together and chat with each other is a significant part of it. Because when you're one of those wacky people who's walking into restaurants with bare feet, you know, it's nice to have someone to talk to who doesn't think you're insane, which might often be your spouse, frankly. So
or not.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it was. So a lot of it was really just giving them an opportunity to be together and creating the kind of content they wanted to participate with.
So did that barefoot community already exist?
Yes and no. It was pretty small. What happened in 2009 was a book came out written by a guy named Chris McDougall called Born to Run. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about the Tarahumara Indians from Mexico.
Yeah, listen to that. It's an interesting book.
Oh, tremendous. And so they're famous for running the Leadville 100 in a pair of sandals or barefoot. And that book, along with some research from Dan Lieberman at Harvard about how when you run barefoot, you actually put less force through your body than if you're in shoes that are designed to reduce the force through mm-hmm. your body. Those two things were the kind of the perfect storm that set this all in motion. And we just went for the ride.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, when you talk about that though, your customers aren't barefoot runners. Are they barefoot now, wannabes? Mm-hmm. Or are they people who just are skeptical about running barefoot and this gets them close?
It's evolved.
It's evolved and it's ultimately a combination. When we first started the company, we would sell a sandal kit to the runner in the family. And I was shipping all the orders back in those early days. And I'd noticed that a week and a half later, an order with five more kits in it from the same name.
Yeah.
And I started talking to people and they would say, oh yeah, I bought them because I read Born to Run and I really like them, but my daughter thought they were super cute and my wife really liked them. And so then we decided to make it a family project. And so that happened very quickly. That was one of the things that gave us some insight into the fact that this was not just for runners.
And is that so it's becoming a fashion comfort thing versus a barefoot runner thing?
Absolutely.
So how do you manage a tribe when you've got some people that are doing it because they're passionate barefoot enthusiasts versus people who just think it's cool?
Well, we let them do what they do. That's fine because they all kind of get along. But we've also backed the conversation up a little. It's not so much about bare feet as about natural movement.
Right.
So a quarter of the bones and joints of your whole body are in your feet, more nerve endings in the soles than anywhere but your fingertips and your lips. And as I like to say, this is not an accident. And so that's the banner they've all sort of rallied around, is about natural movement. And the way I like to think of it is, in the same way that we all now think that natural food is the obvious, better, healthy choice, we're trying to make natural movement that same thing.
And one of the things that we found, too, is that we really just followed our customers because they would start out with the do-it-yourself sandal kit. And back in 2009, it was the middle of the recession. It was a good time to be selling something for $20 that people could make themselves.
And that you could make a profit at. That's kind of a nice
And we made some money. Yeah. But I mean, and they're also getting this superpower of discovering that you have control over a part of your life you never imagined having control over. You can make footwear that is functional in all these different applications. And there are people who were blown away by that. I met someone who said, that opened my eyes so much, I started repairing other things around my house. I started fixing my car. He didn't know that you could do this.
That he could do that. But at the same time, people would wear our sandals all summer long, and then they'd say, but I need something. Now it's winter. What do I do in the winter? I need something I can wear into the office that's a closed-toed shoe. So we followed our customers. Mm. We let them tell us what they wanted to see, and we just followed where they let us.
So the different varieties of shoes now, everything from sort of casual to hiking.
And those performance.
Those are all based on customers saying, we want something that extends this, extends what you do with a different purpose.
Yeah, the biggest problem we have is the day we launch a product is the day we get 100 emails from people saying, oh, that's great, but what I also want is this.
Yeah.
And so then we
tough
have
problem
to
have.
It actually is. We have to be very diligent about how we expand the line. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to add a new product that's catering to a smaller segment of the audience necessarily.
Right.
We have finite resources, so
it's
we can't
easy
do
to
everything.
Chase, it's easy to chase a loud, passionate voice into a bad place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well said.
Thank you. So I noticed that you were trying to get some, when you went on Shark Tank, were you trying to get funding?
Yeah.
Or was that really a visibility thing?
Both.
Yeah.
Because you turned out, it was a ridiculous offer. You wanted half of your company for some nominal amount of money.
$400,000.
Ridiculous.
Wait, I want to pause there. Yeah. So I love that you said nominal amount of money. It was $400,000.
Well, a lot of money, but
for some people, I mean, what was amazing after the show is the number of people who emailed us for whom $400,000 was a lot of money.
Well, of course it's a lot of money, but your business was already stood up. It was already running. Right?
I agree.
Yeah.
But it was very entertaining hearing people call us idiots because we turned down such an amazing amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But we went on with the hope that we were going to make a deal. In fact, the real problem is that our biggest hope was we were going to make a deal with Barbara because she was the only one of the sharks at the time who was actually retired and working with the companies she invested in.
You wanted her actual
She's a brilliant marketer.
She's a brilliant marketer. Prior to going on the show, Stephen and I spent months preparing. So each of the sharks had a book and we read their book or books.
Know what they like, what they want to know.
Exactly. Yeah. And we were just super impressed with Barbara's marketing savvy. And so, but for some reason, she hated Stephen on site. She just apparently reminded her of somebody she didn't like.
Did she say something?
Yeah. Her opening line was, I hated you from the moment you walked out here. You remind me of my ex-husband. And what I...
I didn't hear that on the show. Did I miss that? Or did she... Maybe the piece I saw was
well,
anyway.
All I can say is wow. Like she went on for about 10 minutes and then started insulting Lena for being married to me.
Well, she didn't. She just, I went in there prepared to justify my projections, my mm-hmm. margins, my sales numbers.
But not what your husband looked like?
I didn't really expect I was going to have to defend my marriage.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, that was interesting.
Wow.
But it was a great experience for us because sure. preparing to go on the show mm-hmm. really helped focus us.
Yeah.
It helped.
That's when we got serious.
Yeah, because we knew we were gonna be on our toes, and so it was a great opportunity for us to really talk things through. And whenever you're starting any small business, you're just kind of along for the ride. And so this was a great chance for us to start saying, you know what, here's what we want to happen. Yeah. Here's where we want it to go.
Did you also? I mean, during that episode. It didn't seem like it was a very difficult for you together to decide not to take the deal.
No, we had done a lot of prep about that.
So that's what I was wondering. Is in that preparation, did it also help you see your goals and your objectives together differently? What did you learn?
There are a number of things. When we were trying to figure out the valuation, Shark Tank's an unusual situation because you're presenting an ask and an offer.
Yes.
You're saying, here's what I'm willing to give you for here's what you're going to give me. And that's not the way transactions like that normally go down. So we talked to bankers, we talked to venture capitalists, we talked to people who had bought shoe companies, people who had sold shoe companies, and we got a range of valuations.
Of course,
so that was really interesting to see. People who didn't value growth had a number that was really low. People
sure.
who valued growth and thought that we were on that track put the valuation way high.
Yeah.
So I think what we had to do is land on a number, land on an mm-hmm. ask and an offer. And part of it had to do with the offer because we knew that if we didn't offer them enough, they would just throw us out. And if we offered too much, they want to negotiate.
Yeah.
It would get too rich for our blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we found that balance and we eventually got comfortable with asking for $400,000 for 8%, which is a $5 million valuation.
Mm-hmm.
And while people in the who are not in the footwear industry thought that was high. Mm-hmm. People who are in the footwear industry went, yeah, okay, I can see that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question about that because it seems like here's where I'm scratching my head. And we all watch the meteoric rise of Crocs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know you've got an executive team member now who's from Crocs.
Yes.
And that thing shot up based
like
on one product. And I always thought to myself, this is just crazy.
It's a fad.
Exactly. It's a fad. So what's the difference between what you're doing?
Well, we're not a fad.
Well, some would argue that this is just
a trend.
And it'll go away.
No. Here's my response to that. If you look at the history of footwear for the 10,000 years that we have evidence that humans were making footwear, for the first 9,952 of those years, every one of those shoes looked like ours.
Yeah.
We're not the intervention. The intervention is the modern running shoe. Hmm. And the amazing thing, and I used, I'm going to put air quotes around amazing because that's not the word I'm really thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The amazing thing is that those performance footwear products are sold promising certain benefits, improved performance, reduced injury, among
sure,
others.
Especially the big running shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And the why do you put air quotes around amazing? What's the word you really want to use?
Annoying, reprehensible, evil, horrible, because there's zero evidence that they can provide those benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Zero. I was on a panel discussion just recently at the American College of Sports Medicine's annual conference, and guys from two major footwear brands essentially admitted that they have no proof that they deliver the promises that they claim. And they said, well, you know, running those kind of studies takes a long time. It's a lot of money. There's a lot of confounding factors. Mm. And I'm thinking, you've had 48 years and billions of dollars to do it.
Mm.
What's the problem?
Yeah,
meanwhile, there's tons of research about minimalist footwear, about natural movement that shows the value of it.
Mm.
And that's all being sort of squashed.
And of course, your customers.
Well,
what they say.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I want to talk about a little bit because when barefoot running first came out, when the whole, many people are familiar mm-hmm. with the toe shoes, Vibram Five Fingers, that was a fad. There were a lot of people who kind of rushed in and they that was like the unique, crazy thing. And
mm-hmm.
then it was like that was not the thing anymore and it swung back the other way. And then you started seeing these running shoes that had like 15
inches of padding.
Yeah.
I think I figured out how you know if it's a fad. If your spouse says, I will not be seen in public with you wearing those, it's a fad.
You know, my wife did say that about one of the other brands we talked about.
But the thing that we noticed is while all this was going on, our sales just continue to climb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about our shoes is that once you start wearing this type of shoe, it becomes incredibly difficult to go back to a traditional type of shoe, and which is part of the reason why our customers were clamoring for different styles, because they said, you know, my feet have gotten so accustomed to sensation and flexibility that now when I put them in regular shoes, I really am uncomfortable.
If you can even get in.
Yeah, that's really making making me think more deeply about this, because I came into this interview thinking you weren't really going to be able to change my mind that this is a fad like Crocs.
Yeah.
And yet I'm hearing something with some depth around the customers demanding more and more products that extend what you do for them.
The function of our products is not in any way surprising or unusual. So we have some sandals. People can use those for whatever they use them for. The weird part is that people started using those for running marathons and ultra marathons. But just think of it as a sandal, and you don't have that issue.
Yeah.
Then as we just started developing closed-toe shoes, we have a casual canvas shoe, we have a running shoe, we have a trail running shoe. So we're developing We're developing products for those different uses, but all still with the natural movement philosophy. Nice wide toe box, so your toes can spread and relax, low to the ground, et cetera, et cetera.
So I want to talk about expanding your brand. First, I want to remind listeners that this is ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. I'm speaking with Steven Sashin and Lena Phoenix of Zero Shoes. Please visit ProCo360.com, where you can subscribe to my newsletter. It has news about upcoming episodes, my blog, and books I'm listening to on Audible.com. Again, that's ProCo360.com. I hope you're enjoying this episode with Lena and Steven. Please rate ProCo 360 in your app and share it with friends. And I want to keep talking about this brand development thing. This is one that's really intriguing for me, is that at some point when your brand gets recognized, you start selling, as you are now, on Amazon, on shoes.com, and then the inevitable Costco and things like that. So you're shaking your head. Maybe not Costco.
Not inevitable.
But the point is that as you build these passionate tribes, these are people that bond to a brand because there's some sense of early adopter thing about it, right?
Yeah.
But then as you expand it, how do you maintain the notion of a tribe, and how do you keep people feeling special using your product?
We'll let you know when our sales have tripled.
Yeah, okay.
So, it's actually easier now than it ever has been. I mean, with what you can do on social media, it's really not that challenging. The challenge for me, actually, is a psychological one. And what I mean is that what you want to do is segment the tribe, segment your customers into different groups to see who wants to participate in different ways. And you want to have a sort of concierge mentality of providing them things to do, benefits for doing so, recognition. And I'm really good at setting things up, but I'm not a concierge guy.
Yeah, but do you,
it's kind whatever of nice. Whatever you say,
but you know, it's kind of fun to cater messages to the passionate adopter, right? And then, you know, but do you want to cater it to the 100,000 other 50, you know?
People are really interesting. One of the high points of everybody's day is our customers are taking our shoes all over the world. So we get these incredible photos of, you know, guy wearing our shoes with a kilt at some Scottish castle, woman standing on an iceberg in the middle of the North Sea.
Wow.
You know,
In sandals, by the way.
In
How
sandals.
Gratifying is that?
Incredible.
It's, you know, all we really need to do is nudge them and say, hey, we know you guys are out doing amazing things in our shoes. Mm-hmm. Just send us a picture, you know, put us on Instagram. Let us know what you're doing.
Speaking about us, you're talking about the two of you.
Yeah.
And you two are really the faces of the product line.
Yeah.
You blog, you talk about personal, right? I mean, at some point, can you continue to be the faces and continue to be the personality of the product?
It's a really interesting question. When we started the company, it wasn't my intention. If you look at the first few videos I made, I was deliberately not in them. But then sometimes I'd make a video where all I did was say hello with my face in the camera, and people would respond to that. And I know that from a marketing perspective, people respond to humans. So I decided to make that change. And it's something that I think we can continue to do, and we want to continue to do, because we want people to know that there are real people on the other side of this. When we decided that this was going to become an actual company, we just started thinking about what are the things that we like in a company? What do we respond to? What makes us happy? And part of it is knowing that there's actual humans, that it's not just some corporate edifice that you're just staring in a mirror. And it's the personal component is very important to us.
And before the interview started, when we were talking about sort of the scale of your company, you said you'd sold a couple hundred thousand pairs and now you've lost track. I mean,
Yeah.
How do you describe the scale of your business, and what did that curve look like?
Well, you know, I think the first year, it's pretty straightforward. Our first year was about 100,000 in sales.
Was
and
it really?
114, yeah.
I had no idea. Uh-huh.
And, she's the CFO.
I know.
Then we went to 250 and 500. And the year after that was the year we were on Shark Tank. Mm. And that was 850, roughly. Mm. These are approximate numbers. And then we estimate that we got about $150,000 sales bump from being
on Shark Tank.
Shark Tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the year
it's not that huge because you already had momentum.
Well, keep in mind that we were selling a $20 product.
Well,
that was
a lot.
Finicky little do-it-yourself sandal kit.
Yeah, yeah.
If
yeah.
we were on that show today,
yeah.
my guess is that we would do $3 to $4 million in the week following the show.
Wow. Yeah, it pains us that we were on
the timing,
what are you gonna do? It was. Being on great. When yeah. we were
so
on you, helped us to get, yeah.
perfect.
Are you self-funded now?
Yeah, we have.
So, we started with some high balance credit cards, not recommended,
yeah, yeah.
but it's what we had. And we were growing so quickly, we could do it that way. And then we ran into a guy at a birthday party in Cherry Creek who said, hey, I have a fund and, you know, I'm happy to talk to you about lending you some money at expensive rates. But we were a risky.
Better than credit card?
Not better than our credit cards.
Wow.
Our credit cards were
0%
yeah. balance transfer stuff.
Oh yeah,
but better than some. Our growth rate was so much higher than the interest rate that it made sense to do it regardless.
Sure, of course.
But it was still high interest debt.
Yeah, yeah.
And they started out relatively small with us, but then they saw that A, we kept growing, and B, we made our payments.
Yes,
so
on time.
I would think that the terms got a little better over time.
The
dollar amount increased.
Yeah.
The terms stayed the same.
Wow.
But
they did something else. They wrote up the original contract, and there were some clauses in there.
Well, that part we probably shouldn't talk about.
Well, no, I'm just this is
oh
a
yeah
one.
Now we want to talk about that.
No, this is an easy one. These guys, we really adore these guys because anything that they wouldn't have agreed to if they were in our shoes, they didn't ask us to agree to. So we looked at the contract and said, yeah, we don't want to do that. And they went, yeah, you're right. So it was great.
I mean, that's neat.
It's been wonderful.
Yeah. So now you got...
But there's one other part.
Oh, yeah, let's hear that.
So credit cards and that debt financing, we eventually proved that hell is in fact full of ice. We got a loan from the SBA. And then we did our crowdfunding raise last year.
Yeah, so are you familiar with the equity crowdfunding that was
recently approved by Congress, I think.
The Jobs
correct.
Act in 2012. Mm-hmm. So we were one of the first consumer products companies to utilize what's called Regulation A+, or some people call it a mini IPO, although it's not really that because
there are strong limits on how much somebody can put in, but
yeah.
they don't do a whole lot of background checking either.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so when we first heard about this, we thought, oh, well, that sounds like a lot of work. But then we met with someone who had helped write the crowdfunding statutes for Colorado. And he said, no. This is really about utilizing your tribe. And you guys have a crowd. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that's different about you. So we said, we began to understand, you talk about how to keep customers loyal to the brand, especially.
Have them invest in it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
They
and
are literally invested
so
in
most,
our success.
So most of those early round funders in this Reg A Plus were customers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We raised over $1 million from about 1,100 people. Average investment was, I think, 900 and some.
Wow. And how much of the company did you sell to those
4%.
Investors? Wow. Very good. That's exciting.
So, it was great.
Okay. Shifting gears. How long has the business been going?
Eight and a half years.
Eight and a half years. You've been married since before then.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I'm always intrigued at husbands and wives that can, I mean, you guys haven't fought on this show. So
we haven't had a fight in a while, actually.
But I mean, how does that work? You're working at home. You're working at work. You're working work.
So
what do you do to manage that?
I think it's like any functioning partnership. So we have complementary skill sets. We respect each other and we stay out of each other's lane. So,
I don't have my office next to hers. That would have ended everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, Lena is a brilliant operations and financial and corporate culture-y person. I am a product and marketing person. And I like to say combined with the best CEO I've ever met. So it's been the highlight of my life working with her. And we never planned this, and we were not working people together before this. In fact, we weren't even working people before this. When we got together, we were retired. So
how's that?
I'd done some investing. We were throwing off enough cash that I had a condo that we sold. And after we sold it, I said to Lena, we have two choices. We could invest this money in the stuff that we're already doing and pretty much never have to work again, or we could buy a house and, you know, be on the hook for a $3,000 note every month. And that was how long the conversation took. And we went, and we're out of here. And it wasn't a lot of money, but it was enough that we went, we're done. And that was really, really valuable to get off the rat, what's the wheel, the whatever.
Rat race.
Out of the rat race, off the wheel thing.
The hamster wheel, yes.
The hamster wheel, that was it. But mostly just, you know, people would call and say, hey, you could make an extra $10,000 a month if you just did this work for an hour a day. It's like, I don't need it.
Yeah.
Not there.
Now, so then you were open to something new and exciting.
Well, things changed. So
did you hear about that real estate crash?
Because we had invested in real estate. And so when the crash came, we suddenly, a lot of the income that we thought we were retired on was no longer there. And so we're like, okay, we're going to have to figure out something. And we didn't have, you know, we just bootstrapped it.
So just fell in our laps.
How long did it take this? I'm going to wrap us up here. How long did it take for the business to actually start making money?
Define making money.
Where you didn't have to live off your credit cards anymore. How about that?
Well, we use the credit cards because, I mean, that's part of it's working capital.
That was funding that business, right?
But I mean, now it's just working capital. It's not funding.
I don't know how to define making money. How do you define making money?
You're the one who asked the question.
I did ask the question. Okay. Yeah. So when did you start making, I don't know, $100,000 in profit a year? Year two, year three?
No.
Oh, no. Profit? No. No. I mean, the first year we just did $100,000 total. So
yeah. So I think we had to start paying ourselves a salary.
Right. When did you do that?
We wanted to put everything back into the business. So we took very nominal salaries after 2 years and then slowly ratcheted it up. And so we're probably getting paid half of market right now, but the business is, it became technically profitable 2 years ago, maybe three,
two or three.
Yeah. But part of that is because we do have a lot of debt financing at high interest rates. So we've had positive EBITDA margin for several years. So,
you're right at that threshold.
Yeah.
I can tell you when it changed. It was about, maybe 9 months ago, and Lena said to me, hey, look, anything you want to do on the marketing side that's $1,000 or less, just do it without asking me. It was like, wow. Oh my God.
Hey.
Yeah. So that was a really big deal.
Because normally I'd be like, okay, how could this go wrong?
Yeah. Now you got $1,000 budget. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I guess that's a good note to wrap up on that now you can spend $1,000 without asking. That's awesome. Well, it's been fun to tell you. Is there anything else we should know before I wrap up as far as, I know it's Xero Shoes.
It's xeroshoes.com. Yes, although if they spell the Z, you'll eventually find us. The thing I want to toss in just for the fun of it, people often ask, you know, what advice do you have for people in our situation? And mine is really pretty straightforward and pretty simple, and that's get a government job with a pension.
Yeah.
Because holy smokes, man, this is not for the faint of heart. And of course, you know, you can't tell an entrepreneur not to do it. They'll do it no matter what.
Yeah, of course.
And anyone who you could talk out of it, you know, you should.
Yeah, well, so when you think about it, okay, I'm going to extend that a little bit more. One more question. When you say it's not for the faint of heart. What memory comes first to the front of your mind about something that really, really was tough?
Oh, you know, there's many.
Of course, there's so many. I know. When you say not for the faint of heart, what are you thinking?
Look, I mean, we could literally pick a month and find one that month. But
I think one of the most nerve-wracking for me was we had placed an order for our, you know, new fall production. And we had a loan that was, we were a week away from closing when suddenly the underwriting committee changed their mind and yanked the funding. And I had to scramble to find a way to pay for all this product that I'd already ordered. So
how much
money
are you talking about?
It was $500,000 or $600,000.
Well, there you go. When you say not for the faint of heart, that's a good example.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today I'm ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I've been speaking with Lena Phoenix and Stephen Sashen of Xero Shoes. That's X-E-R-O Shoes. Lena and Stephen, thank you for sharing your story about building a new Colorado-based brand in a crazy internationally competitive space. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And to my listeners, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360. This is Dave Tabor. My mission is to feature world-class entrepreneurs who can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast via your app and reviewing the show, and by subscribing to the ProCo 360 newsletter. Thanks again to show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones and Keller, and to my producer, Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com and via your favorite podcast app. Search ProCo 360. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing.